Hello, welcome back, Toaster fans. Thanks for being there. Thanks for bringing me your ears and your listening numbers. Today's episode with Nish Kumar is a belter, even though he was 15 minutes late. I love him dearly. It was a wonderful episode. Please enjoy. And also, head over to our YouTube channel. That's what I'm hawking at you today. YouTube.com/@mymatebottatoaster. If you listened to last week's episode and heard Paul Foote talking about his boiler suit, you can see it now. The whole episode with Paul Foote being magnificent. And I should say thank you to everyone who's messaged me about last week's episode, because Paul was just, glorious. Anyway, you can watch all of that on our YouTube channel. There's loads of clips up there. More things dropping on the tubes. Can we call it the tubes? Does that made me feel a bit sick. Anyway, lots of things happening on our YouTube channel. YouTube.com/@mymatebottatoaster. Nish Kumar episode begins now. The amount of stuff that I've got done. is there any way we could put one of these in every week? And one of us can be late and actually get... I feel so alive. It only took 15 minutes. Thank you, mate. So thank you for being late. I appreciate it.
That, you know what? That we're on dangerous ground if we're rewarding me for being late. That feels like the sort of behaviour that we should not be encouraging. Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. But don't pass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's my mate, Water Toaster.
Nish, how do you feel about your privacy, just out of interest, passing interest?
My privacy is something that I guess I feel pretty strong about, because I have, I've basically, my phone has so many location services disabled that sometimes when I try and order a taxi, it says, this service is not available in Brazil. And you're like, have I ended up in Brazil? But my partner was saying, oh, that's what happens when you haven't got any of your location settings.
Wait, does everything default to Brazil? Is that how that works?
I've no idea. All roads lead to Brazil. All roads lead to Rio.
So yeah, that's
it's
it.
It's the oldest phrase in tech.
Oh, my God. There is probably some nerd who set that up, so that would happen based on that phrase. The VPN is a... They actually now sell them, don't they? They're probably advertising them in between on this... You've probably already listened to 3 VPN adverts on this podcast alone. But they've sort of become a legit thing, haven't they, the VPN? If they feel like they're legal, and yet it still feels like I'm getting a Region 2 DVD or something when you use a VPN.
You and I could not have revealed our age more viscerally in that moment than to go, it's like getting a Region 2 DVD. But it's exactly like that. Because I don't have one, and all of my friends, and occasionally I'll say something like, oh yeah, I haven't seen that show because it's on HBO Max, and we don't have HBO Max in the UK. So we're sort of at the whim of which HBO show Sky has bought. And people look at me like I've said, I only have a VHS player. And it's steam powered. So I gotta wait for my steam guy to deliver a new bag of hot air before I can watch that TV program. Everyone has them, and sort of, so there's this like sense of regionlessness to a lot of a lot of TV programs.
It's just insane that there's this idea of physical media that you could only play in certain parts of the world. And within very much living memory, not even a decade, really. Like, it's changed so quickly.
Well, can I tell you that it's very much in living memory in my day-to-day life? Because my house looks like...
Yeah.
I would say my house looks like a kind of our price in the early 2000s. Even as I sit in front of you, I'm just... this is not something I've set up. There's just a load of CDs.
No, lovely. Oh.
Just some of the 200 CDs I own.
Oh.
Not even like, I mean, sure, there's some historic ones in there. There's Bob Dylan.
There he is, Desire.
There's Channel Orange by Frank Ocean. That album came out in 2012.
Yeah, that's quite recent, that. That's pretty new, that one. Yeah. So you got some fresh beats there as well. This comes round on the show a lot, the mourning of the passing of physical media. I refuse to allow my books to go to the cloud in the sort of, this kind of Walhalla of things getting burnt and sent off. But my CDs, And I do feel like it's a Viking thing. I think we should, when we take our CDs to the charity shop and our DVDs, we should stand there and there should be a bugler or something. You know what I mean? Because you're losing a physical part of your life.
I've done too many podcasts because when you said bugler, I imagined Andy Zaltzman. So I've just done far too many podcasts. But yeah, no, I mean, but can I tell you something?
Always.
I believe physical media is making a comeback.
Interesting. Tell me more, because I agree with you and I'm encouraged by this.
Well, everyone's buying records now anyway.
Yes.
So that's something that's becoming more, and also because I think bands actually make money from it. So I think they're very keen for us to buy their records. Gotcha. But also because of, so there's some, like, I have teenage cousins that are buying CDs now because they, it's part of the like thing where they're like, you shouldn't use your phone before sleep. So they're listening to CDs on Walkmans so that they don't have the blue light thing. But also because there's now this practice of streaming libraries just going, we're just going to dump that TV show.
Yeah.
People are now buying Blu-rays again.
Oh, fuck's sake. I'm getting rid of stuff. That's, you can tell that's why that's happening, because it's, as I start to do something, society does the opposite. And that is, so this is on me and I take the credit. I honestly, Nish, I've just got rid of fucking loads of stuff. So much. Look, yes, look at this,
I will
look at
say.
This. There's a bag full of stuff right next to me. Look, that's going. Never even been opened. Look at that. Look at it. Sake. This is me. I've done this.
I mean, this is all anecdotal evidence, so it's perfectly possible that I'm talking out of my backside.
Well, I feel like you're an influencer, especially with the teenagers, Nish. I feel like you're a voice they trust. So if you're saying that, we're in trouble.
I do think it makes sense that some physical media is making a comeback. I think vinyls are nice, you know, it's like a nice bit of artwork.
Yeah.
I think people like the idea of like the, but also truly, like, friends of mine are in bands, and I remember I went to watch Martha, a really like cool pop punk band from the Northeast, and they sort of have various offshoots, and Nathie SG, who's one of the Marthas, he did a solo gig recently that I was at, and he said, look, if you want to buy our EP, and then he quoted some appalling figure, like, buying
numbers.
One of the EPs is the equivalent of streaming one of our songs 50,000 times. Like,
wow.
it was some absolutely appalling number.
That's a great way of putting it. That's so clever.
And I think James Blake gave an interview last week where he was like, people have to pay for stuff. Like, you can't just get it all for free. And I think people are coming to that understanding. And also, I think you should do the dots of, you know, people keep getting angry about, I'm not going to name anyone specifically because I'm trying to upset people less, but people get angry with X person or X band because they went to a private school and aren't they all very posh, but again, you're just getting angry with, ultimately you're just getting angry with some 20-year-olds. And what you should be angry with is like all of the systemic factors that mean that only posh people can be in the entertainment industry.
But it's quite funny, the idea that all music has just gone, music has gone Tory.
Yeah, it's
even the music.
Of course,
oh God,
why wouldn't it
happen? They're everywhere.
Why wouldn't it happen? Because if you have to be independently wealthy in order to participate in any of these things.
Of course. I mean, it's you know, it's Coldplay. We're just gonna have a load of Coldplays. Coldplay are called Coldplay because they met skiing. That is completely untrue, but I'm gonna push that. Ooh, my baby. So listen, here's what I have to do, right? This is part of the show now, is that I'm going to log into your Amazon.
Now, that's a bit complicated for me because I don't use Amazon, but I do use a string of different online shopping platforms.
Okay, great. What do you think could be a good place for us to get a proper look in on the truth behind Nish Kumar?
Well, here's what I would say. I would say if we go to my Waterstones account.
Love that. Love that. Oh, yes. Yes, please.
Waterstones.
We've never done that.
And Rough Trade. Then you get a real sense of.
I mean, I'm now on waterstones.com having a lovely browse. So
it's truly like when people talk to me about this stuff, it reveals this like weird, like almost like prepper streak in me. that, like, it sounds like I'm about to, like, but... go off the grid and move to a compound in Virginia. I promise I'm a normal person. I don't.
You're the sort of guy who's got. Have you got an emergency bag under your desk?
Yeah.
Just ready to go at any point.
I don't trust a lot of these people with my data.
I like the idea that you've got an emergency bag full of vinyl. Just endless, lots of copies of the new Yard Act. We'll be fine.
Good album, the new Yard Act album.
I love those guys. Of course I do. What I love about Yard Act is they present as a band for young, cool people, and yet loads of Six Music centrist dads listen to them. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah. I'm on the new Yard Act album. It would be extremely funny if it was me rapping, but it's not.
The new Yard Act album looks amazing. I haven't got into it yet. I've listened to it several times, but I need to properly do, I think, what the kids would probably call a listen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Rather than just listening, I need to give it a noun, a listen.
There's a song called Blackpool Illuminations on it that I think might be the best thing they've done across the two albums.
Is that the one that you're in?
No. Actually, it's not.
There's a song called Nish Kumar.
Called Nish is actually quite a cool guy, everybody. So it's not one of their better titles. It's not one of their pithier titles.
Oh, they
I'll
do
say
pith.
This for the Yard Act boys.
So well. So Nish, what we've got here is, and we've never done this before actually,
yeah.
So we can see what you've been up to on Waterstones. And I think, I don't know if there's been some sort of mistake, because you bought the comic... Hardback, sorry, it's not a comic, it's a hardback, guys, hardback.
First of all, bad start.
Yeah.
Bad start, 38-year-old man.
Thank you, yes. Absolutely, go on. So what is it? It's a graphic novel, yeah?
It's a graphic novel.
Graphic novel.
But it's a bad start for the first thing that we're talking about. It's not like any sort of, not some book about politics. It's not even anything. It's not like some useful thing. It's comic books.
Yeah. How the left can recover. What next? For the centrist ground, where did the Tory party go from here? When we hear you on the podcast, Nish, when we hear you doing your political comedy, full of information. I wonder how much information you get from Gotham City, because you've bought Batman 89 hardback graphic novel, and it cost £22. It's just I'm enjoying the, is it, let's play a game of, is that the sound of a man laughing or crying? I think it's laughter. He's bought it not once, not twice, but three times. Three separate occasions you bought the same book. So I guess my first question is, what are you doing to these books?
Can I also tell you, I have a small confession to make.
Do it.
I already owned that book before I started, but just saying it. I bought four copies of that book.
Are you trying to single-handedly prop up the DC empire? Is this your way of pushing back against the Marvel man?
Look, let me explain myself, okay? I actually think, in many ways, if the purpose of the show is to glean some kind of insight into a person...
We're there and we're done. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
All of this is very telling. So I bought this book because I read about it online because a friend of mine told me about it, and he was like, I grew up really loving the Tim Burton Batman films, right? So I was a huge fan of the first one. It's probably one of the first films I can remember seeing on TV, or I think I taped it off the TV again. Mm-hmm. Really, I could not be more at the cutting edge of culture here, but yeah. And so I really loved it. I had all the Batman toys. I actually, and this is again a very revealing anecdote about me, when Batman Returns came out, I was so excited, then discovered that I couldn't see it because it was a 12, and immediately burst into tears. Thereby, I will say, validating the decision to not let me see Batman Returns. It shouldn't be an age
test. You were
not
emotionally strong enough.
Yeah, I was not emotionally prepared. I was not emotionally prepared for Michelle Pfeiffer in the skin tight latex. I wasn't emotionally prepared for it. Also, that movie is insane. When you rewatch Batman Returns, it's really good, but it's also deeply strange. And Danny DeVito as the Penguin is so viscerally horrible. And what I also really find funny is they sort of copied his hair for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. They've sort of given him the Penguin hair again. So I really loved those two films, and then I watched Batman Forever and Batman Robin.
So Batman was your guy. Batman was your number
one. Yeah, Batman was my guy. So, but what I didn't realise is that this Sam Hamm, who's the guy who wrote the first two films, had written a third film, which Tim Burton was going to direct, and then Warner Brothers was essentially like, we can't keep selling toys if you keep making weird bondage fetish movies. So they then basically pulled the plug on that movie and then got Joel Schumacher and made the, and tried to make more kind of PG kid friendly films. Right. But there was a third script for what would have been a third Tim Burton Batman film. And so a couple of years ago, he posted bits of the script and then an artist illustrated them with the characters basically looking like Michael Keaton and Michelle Pfeiffer, and also Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face, because Billy Dee Williams plays Harvey Dent in the first Batman movie, and he was supposed to come back in the third one, and they just bought out his contract and cast Tommy Lee Jones in Batman Forever. And so this comic book is basically what the third film would have been. So
it's the lost film, it's the missing film.
That's right. Yeah, it's the missing third Tim Burton film. And so when I heard about it, I was like, man, that's so far up my alley. So I went and got it at a comic book shop. It was probably just after we came out of lockdown, and loved it. And so then immediately was like, I'm going to order this and send it to my brother. Because my brother and I watched a lot of those Batman films together. We talk about Batman a lot. And so I was like, my brother's going to absolutely love this.
Did you give him a heads up? Or did he just suddenly go downstairs one day? Because I like the idea of just appearing at the front door and...
He knew. I'd already told him about it. So I bought that and sent it to him. Then I remembered, if I'm buying it, I should probably buy one for my friend Nikesh, who's the person who told me about this in the first place, because he hadn't read it. He said, I haven't read it. I think it'd be interesting. So I was like, but I didn't have those two thoughts at the same time. So I bought one on Waterstones, ordered it, sent it to my brother. That's the first purchase. Then I remembered that I should get one for Nikesh. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll send that to Nikesh. Then I thought my friend Inua would really like this. So then I also then bought him a third one. It's
unbelievable.
Absolutely unacceptable. So, like, listen, it tells you a lot about a person. He's generous. He's generous.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. But he's not an effective guy.
No. There's a lot about... There's the Bruce Wayne-Nish Kumar crossover is there. You know what I mean? Like, you need your assistance. You need your entourage. You need your guys.
There's an element of, you know... At its core, there's something very nice at work, but
it's sort of a feeder vibe. Ooh. You know what I mean? That's what addicts do. They're keen. Come on, mate, stay for one more. Stay for one more beer. I can't. I've got to get home. No, go on, one more. It's what you're doing. It's what you're doing, and that's fine. It's a harmless addiction.
It's sort of. He means well, but he does not have any capacity.
Are you third personing yourself here? Is this what's happened to
him? I'm just trying to imagine what someone listening to this podcast is thinking. He means well. He's a bit full of himself because he does refer to himself in the third person. But I think ultimately there is a well-meaning guy in there. But he is also, let me be clear, utterly useless. Can you imagine?
I like the idea that you're walking down the street and you go, God, I've got to send him a copy of the comic. So I'll catch you guys up. Sorry, one second. And then you're just there on your phone going, deliver to. Mate, what's your address? Okay. I've got that done. Do you know, was it like that? Was it just a sudden like epiphany? Yeah. I've got to send
them. No, it was like, it was what it, I'll be frank with you. It was an epiphany. It was a sequential epiphany. So I ordered one for my brother and I was like, great, send that off. Then I was like, oh God, I should have ordered one for Nikesh. Send that off. Then I was like, oh God. I should have ordered one for Inua. It's so dumb.
You're sort of like a DC Gideon's vibe. Like you're just going to be putting them...
What's the purchase history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate bought a toaster.
Is there often a descent, certainly with those franchises, is there a descent into merchandise? You've really planted that idea in my head earlier on, the idea that the studio go, we need to make more plastic toys, so you have to change the story. Is that often what the motivation is?
I mean, I think that's certainly what it was with those films, because that era of that era, there was definitely a sense of we need to maximize sort of, I don't know, do people still buy tie-in toys? I don't have children, it's not clear to me.
Yes, they do. And I cannot, honestly, it's funny you should be a Batman guy, because I wouldn't say my kids are into Batman or superheroes, but there are so many variations on Batman toys. And at one stage, we used to get all the toys out in the bath. And honestly, when they were like 5 or 6, so, you know, crucially not 38, but when they were 5 or 6, they would sit in the bath. This isn't permission for you to do this. With like 9 or 10 different iterations of Batman, and you'd almost be able to assign each of the Batmen, the Bat people, to the different directors. That's very Burton, that one. But there were so many. But the kids' toys thing is still huge.
So what I would say is I don't think there was as big a stigma. I think that people, even now, I would say people actually reading the comics is still, even now that comic book films are a kind of ubiquitous cultural juggernaut, I would still say there's a difference between people who watch the films and actually read the comic books. But it certainly wasn't, you know, by that point, by the kind of late 90s, early 2000s, there were quite a lot of Batman films, and then that segued into the Spider-Man, X-Men films, which then itself segued into the like Christopher Nolan Batman films, which again are the sort of,
that's when shit got real for me. That's when
it became like kind of they became sort of artistically credible and got nominated for Oscars and stuff, and then that kind of started this, and then Marvel, then the first Iron Man came out in 2008, and that sort of began the period where it felt like every movie was a comic book movie for a period.
Yeah.
But it
had its sort of imperial phase, didn't it? All those I wonder if that's done now to an extent. It feels like it is, or it's beginning to wane.
So I think there's just a problem where people have a good idea, and everyone goes, "That's a great idea," and so they go, "We'll do more of it," and they go, "This is fantastic." And then they go, "We'll do even more of it." And we go, "This is even better." And then they do so much of it that we go, "My God, this is terrible." And like, I guess it's just at a certain point when things become too profitable to exercise restraint over.
And you're describing capitalism. Capitalism.
That's what's happened there. That's exactly the problem, isn't it? You sort of have a good idea that people are into, and then you have to keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it.
To try and relive the first hit. So it's got a bit of an addiction thing going on as well. You're always trying to get that first buzz. I remember when I got my first Walkman when I was a kid, tape playing Walkman. And I could even remember the smell of it and the fetishization of the wires and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm still hunting for that moment. And no tech is ever going to love me like that Walkman did. It's true.
I guess people are jonesing for their first hit, but it is with film franchise stuff, is if you leave it just a couple of years, people will be excited to watch these things again. You know, it's like the gap between the George Clooney Batman and the first Christian Bale Batman is not enormous. You know, it's like the late 90s to 2005. And so it's not like you have to wait forever for these things. But if you just give people a bit of a rotation.
Well, the Greeks had it, mate, when the Greeks did their 4 years between the Olympics, famously, which was their idea.
You know what? As with a lot of stuff, the Greeks were ahead of the game.
If
we'd come up with the Olympics now, there'd be an Olympics every year.
It would have been like Bake Off or X Factor. We'd have had it every year, and after 7 years, we'd have gone, "Oh, mate, send it to commercial TV. Stick it on Dave. I'm not into it now. It's dead to me." Okay, all right, good. So that's Batman, and I'm getting a vision of you as a kid. So like the nerdy thing. So you're not the nerdy weirdo. You're quite a happy-go-lucky kid. This all seems okay, yes? Or is that if I just very much pasted over some large cracks there? But I'm sort of extrapolating quite a lot there.
No, I mean, listen, I was talking to my cousin actually over the weekend about, you know, being certainly at my age, 40 is imminent, and it is an age where people start thinking, oh, you know, I don't really feel like I'm relevant or I know what's cool anymore. Yeah. And I actually started thinking that myself. I was like, oh man, I don't. And then I had sort of had a word. I was saying to my cousin, like, I had to have a bit of a word with myself and go, you never knew what was cool.
Yeah.
You never knew what was relevant. When you were 15 years old, people were trying to have a conversation with you about garage music, and you were trying to extol the virtues of Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix. There's no sense that you know what's cool.
You were the weirdo then. Be the weirdo now, culturally and personality-wise. Always be the weirdo.
When I was a kid, the music that I was into, I used to like talk to my friends' dads about it.
Yeah.
Because they were the only ones who wanted to talk about Lou Reed.
I mean, that's just hilarious. Like, Gary, can I come over your house on Saturday? Yeah, mate, it'd be great to see you. Yeah, is your dad in?
Yeah. I did have friends that were also into that, like, sort of sat in that slightly out of time space. But I was saying to my cousin, like, it is amazing that even I, who was never relevant, am now worried about losing something that I never had. And there were occasional moments where my interests would converge with the zeitgeist. But it was transitory, you know. Just that one year where people were also into Outkast, you're like, okay, fine. that's fine. On the subject of Outkast, this was actually a present from one of the men I bought the Batman figure to. I've got two Outkast action figures here that sit either side of my on either side of my desk.
But yeah, so this is like a cultural swap shop that you've got going on. I love it. Fucking brilliant.
Patreon.com/toasterpod. Patreon.com/toasterpod.
Let's discuss the next thing that I've got, because we have got some of your eBay purchases here as well.
Yeah.
Which you've very kindly shared with the class. And I couldn't be more excited about this one, because I love this band. You have bought... fucking hell. REM Automatic for the People, the, I guess, original vinyl from 1992 for, and this is an important part here, £125.
Correct.
Okay.
And what have I also bought?
You've also bought, let's have a look down and see what else Nish has got, because, of course, variety is an important part of a curious mind.
Yeah.
You've also bought REM Automatic for the People, original 1992 LP first. It's the same.
100%. Same price.
But cheaper. $114.99, that one.
$114.99, yeah. Let me tell you what's happened there.
Talk to me.
This is now the reverse of... this is a reverse generosity.
Right.
I bought that for James Acaster's birthday. I bought him... because he loves REM. And we
Does
talk
he?
A lot about... We love REM and we talk
a lot about...
Oh, can I
be
about,
in your REM gang? Because I love REM. I think that's what your gang needs.
We talk a lot about our favourite REM albums. And and so for his birthday, he's a very good gift giver. I'm surrounded by a lot of good gift givers in my life. You know, a lot of my friends are very good gift givers. You've seen the Outkast action figures. That's a great gift from Nikesh. Acast is a very thoughtful gift giver. And my partner is like, treats gift giving, it's like a competitive sport. Like the gifts will be so specific and precise and configured to your interests. And so, and I come from a family where we just get a 20 quid note and jam it in a card and then give it to you on your birthday.
And you open the card. You don't even read what's inside the card. You just shake the card once.
In the bin. Straight
it's basically a cash machine.
Straight to HMV. Lovely. Yeah. It's but I so I've had to like learn how to, you know, be a kind of person who like thinks very carefully about what presents they're buying for people. Ed Gamble's a very good gift giver. There's a lot of good gift givers around me in my immediate orbit. Yeah. So I've had to like learn and really work hard. So this year I had the idea of, okay, I'm going to find on eBay first pressing 1992 Automatic for the People.
Yeah.
Get on there, found it, mint condition, perfect, buy it. What's my first thought after that? I want one of those.
I need to get one. Oh, I see. Myself.
Yeah, immediately. It's the reverse.
Before it even arrives, did you go, I want one? Or did you arrive and you were like, oh, I might keep this?
What do you mean before it even arrived? This is the hour after. This is the hour after. I immediately thought.
I did a similar thing. I bought my best friend a signed copy of the... It was like a gold disc of Flood by They Might Be Giants, which is my favourite album of all time.
Lovely.
That's where my... I need my brain to live in that album, basically. And I bought it for him and instantly saw it. He unwrapped it at his house. And it was the second time I'd seen it because obviously I wrapped it up. But watching him unwrap it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get one of those. Straight away. I was like, I'll just take it. But that's an interesting thing as well, actually, because that's the fact that Ed and I always listen to Flood and They Might Be Giants. We talk about it all the time. Often we'll text each other if we're having a good Flood session. Do you have that with Acaster? Do you do a thing where you'll be like, oh, mate,
yeah,
I'm absolutely smashing Automatic for the People's Back Doors in right now? Is there a moment?
Yeah, all the time. I got a first pressing of Murmur, but from a secondhand record shop in Manchester, I think. And you're in constant dialogue about which one the best album is. I mean, I think my favorite is Automatic for the People, but I also one of the things we both love is New Adventures in Hi-Fi, which is the album after Monster that they kind of recorded in like a lot of stadium sound checks. And so it has this kind of like really like echoey sort of empty sound that it actually works really well for the songs on it.
They're such a great band. I love R.E.M. Yeah. And it breaks my heart that they're broken up. Did you see on Michael Stipe's Insta the other day? They did a little gig. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. It would be incredible for them to do a comeback tour.
They will. Surely. Daddy Cash comes calling.
I'm sure they will.
Capitalism, mate.
But the only thing is, I don't know with that generation of musicians, because that was the last generation of musicians, maybe not the last, but maybe the last but one generation of musicians that actually made money from selling loads of albums. So I wonder with that generation whether there will be. I don't know. I'm only piecing this together from interviews. It doesn't feel like they're the kind of band that spent it all on drugs, basically. Like a lot of those 60s, a lot of those 60s bands, I think 60s and 70s bands, maybe even into the 80s a little bit, had to keep touring because they all signed terrible record contracts that, you know, ripped them off. And even in like the 3.5 years Jimi Hendrix was recording, he signed one terrible deal that caused him to have to do a whole load of more touring than he was already doing, even in that sort of short span of time. But I wonder if there's like that generation of musicians in the kind of 80s and 90s that maybe did sort of make enough money.
Is that why you're touring so much as a stand-up, just to try and pay off terrible deals?
Blew it all on cocaine, baby.
You blew it all on multiple copies of Batman 89. That's where it all went.
I've never taken cocaine. I blew it all.
I don't need to.
I blew it all on buying 4 copies of Batman 89 and 2 copies of Automatic for the People.
Why would you need narcotics? Why would you possibly want that? It's amazing.
In my sort of late teenage kind of proto high fidelity music obsession, I would get like the, you know, best 100 albums of all time and list systematically work my way through all of them,
just literally buy them.
Yeah, that's what I spent all my money on. And like birthday, everything was just movie tickets and CDs. And so I got Automatic for the People and I really loved it, thought it was great. And then years later, I was reading an article about, it must have been coming up for a reissue. I know when it would have been. It would have been 2015.
Yeah.
I was reading about it and there was a whole thing about how they had all turned 30. And so I know it was 2015 because that was the year I turned 30.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, you know what? Let me go back and listen. And I heard it in a completely new way.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's, you know, it's just wanting to appear intelligent, so tricking yourself emotionally and being like, yeah, I understand.
I really get this, and you don't understand any of it. Not
but something about it, something about songs like Sweetness Follows and Night Swimming, if you listen to Night Swimming when you're 16, you don't really understand nostalgia because your life is sort of still happening to you. Mm. But once you get to 30, you have enough years to reflect on with a certain sense of nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then you can basically what you're saying is once you get to 30, you can really dig into real sadness. You know, you try it out as a teenager. You try and wear it, but it doesn't work. But then it really fits. Post 30, it really.
No, you've racked up. By the time you've hit 30, you've racked up a few more mistakes to reflect on.
We like to listen to Toast, and we're not the kind who would boast. And even in spite of the host, we still like to listen to Toast. La, la, la,
I would say this has not been a straightforward episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster, but I you know, I would have expected nothing.
I apologise, and I can only hold myself responsible for that.
I think anything abnormal is better. This has been excellent. And, you know, we've learned about what a generous gift giver and gift receiver you are.
And self giver.
And self gift giver. listen, Nish, you are on tour, so it's an autumn tour in 2024, right? But tickets, are they available now, this second?
Tickets available now at nishkumar.co.uk.
Okay, great. And it's mainly about really happy, positive things, right? Because the show is called Nish, Don't Kill My Vibe.
Nish, Don't Kill My Vibe.
Love that, love that.
I'm a huge fan of Kendrick Lamar and a huge fan of fouling the atmosphere at an otherwise pleasant dinner party. Oh, with my politics.
Oh, just good. Just good. Don't do politics here. No, do politics here. And then walk away with no remorse whatsoever.
When people say the two things you're not supposed to talk about are politics and religion, you're like, what's left?
What's left
apart from, you know, apart from cinema and music? Yeah. There's nothing else left.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. Listen, Nish, I think you're brilliant. Thank you so much for coming up, My Mate Bought a Toaster. Next time, if you could buy 2,000 or 3,000 things off Amazon over a 10-year period.
Perfect.
Yeah? So we'll line that up.
That's perfect.
Great. Set up the account today, because, you know, Amazon are the good guys. And get buying some stuff and come on it again, please.
Thanks, Tom. I will.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, dude. Thank you to the brilliant Nish Kumar. That's today's episode done and dusted. Next week, we have got Desiree Birch coming on. If you are a Taskmaster fan, you'll have seen her on that. She is so good. Honestly, she was in for an hour and a half. We just talked and talked and talked. I love her, and I think you're going to love the episode. Loads of stuff. She's came over from America like 8 or 9 years ago, so she has a fascinating life story about why she came here and all sorts of stuff. So Desiree Birch, that is next week's episode. That'll be dropping on our patreon.com/toasterpod very, very soon. If you're not already a member, the lowest price band is £3 a month to get all the episodes early without ads. Have a great day. Lots of love. All the best. Kind regards. Take care.
It's my mate, toaster. Oh, it's my mate,